Welcome to the DSS Fed Health Forward podcast series. In June, Federal News Network published an article about the impact of emotion AI on veteran mental health care, which was authored by Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, who's the former executive director of the Prevents Presidential Executive Order Task Force and strategic advisor to DSS, as well as Michelle Burst, who's the director of strategic innovations and analytics at DSS, and Rob Gordon, the Chief Growth Officer at SBG Technology Solutions. And today we are diving further into this topic with these experts. And Dr. Van Dalen, Michelle, and Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to have you all here. And what an excellent and very enlightening article that you all published in Federal News Network. So we'll certainly make that a key topic today for this discussion. And let's really start off at the top and let's talk about the problem set around suicide prevention for veterans, active military, and their families. And we'll start with Barbara on this one.
Thanks, Matt, for hosting this and for allowing us and encouraging us. And thank you to DSS for supporting this ongoing conversation, which is critical. So the first thing I think I want to just remind everyone is that suicide is a huge concern, not just in the military and veteran community. It is a challenge in our nation. It is a challenge around the world. And the experience that we all shared of during COVID only made matters worse. And so this has been an issue that the VA and the Department of Defense have both worked tirelessly on for years. Some folks may recall I was working and Rob and I were working actually together then at a different time and place during the Iraq-Afghanistan war. There was actually an article that came out in Time magazine that was called One a Day. At that point in time, sadly, one active duty service member was dying by suicide every single day during that period. So this is not something that is new. It is an ongoing challenge. I know we're going to talk more about what the challenges are and why and how some of the current technology can assist us. But it's important for people to understand this is a very complex issue. There is not one cause. There is not one solution. It affects our veterans for different reasons than it affects others in society, but some similar. It also affects our service members for different reasons and their families. So I guess to start out, just this is a huge challenge. It is related to mental health, but it's not only related to mental health. It also can be complicated by other financial factors, by relationship factors for that individual. And the goal is to help us identify individuals who are at highest risk, to make sure that we reach folks to prevent, to make sure that we respond appropriately when an incident occurs in a community or in a unit. And that's what we're going to talk about today. What are some of the tools that are now emerging that can allow us to do those things?
That's great. Thanks, Barbara. Appreciate those insights. And yeah, let's dive into the topic of the article. And the article is all about emotion AI. And it seems like 2023 is certainly the year of AI. It seems to be ubiquitous. It's everywhere right now. And Rob, I'd love to get your take. Like, from your perspective, what is AI broadly? There's emotion AI, there's generative AI. Would love your take on this.
Yeah, good question, Matt. And as Barbara talked about, here we have challenges basically in the military community and or largely the United States around mental health issues. And we have now new technologies that can assist human beings, especially as you note in the article, crisis line operators in being able to both handle and triage callers who are under stress. Artificial intelligence is a technology that can assist with that and has been around, AI has been around, actually for years, dating back to the late 60s and early 70s. And it's always good to start off with the definition of artificial intelligence. So think of the application of code and mathematics and algorithms to teach computers how to think, how to act, and how to generate new content, much like human beings do. So initially, when artificial intelligence was developed, the paradigm was that we could use those sorts of processes that I just mentioned earlier to get computers to think like human beings. And what we're finding now is that AI not only thinks like human beings, but there's a machine intelligence that is emerging as well. What that means is the application of this type of intelligence to problems and to challenges really brings to it new innovations and new opportunities to address issues in novel and more effective ways. So in the article, this is something that we address in terms of how to bring this new technology to address issues of mental health.
Yeah, you know, it's great, Rob, that you broke it down like that. Because one of the things that I think we don't talk about enough, and as we're talking about this population, our veterans, our service members, their families, you know, Matt, you said it, you know, AI is the buzz phrase. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's looking at it, thinking about it. We recently saw some good movement coming out of the administration around, you know, safeguards and that we need to be thinking about it. But I think we often skip over what is it actually? You know, people have ideas about what it is that can actually prevent us from implementing effective technology in specific areas and mental health. And we can talk about that and suicide prevention, because that's an issue where people feel very vulnerable already. It's not like using AI to create a beautiful picture, you know, hey, let's do that. This is a very different space. So I'm really glad that Rob raised sort of took us to that level, granular level of understanding what it is and what it isn't, because this is part of the work we need to do if we're going to implement it in this space.
That's great. Actually, a perfect segue, which really is the crux of the article itself, which is really all about emotion AI. So if you don't mind, tell us about emotion AI and its overall benefits. And Michelle, we'll start with you on this one.
Okay. Well, it's been around for a while. I mean, Rob's discussed, you know, AI and how it works and how it thinks. But emotion AI itself has been around for a while. I would say at least 10 to 15 years, you know, if not longer. And it's been providing many, many benefits to various different businesses. For example, in sales, it's used to increase sales, you know, for marketing purposes. In banking and insurance, it's used for fraud detection. They can detect if you're trying to tell a lie. It's been used also for terrorist activity to kind of, you know, locate and find somebody who's trying to deceive others. So there's many use cases. I mean, it's been also used for hiring. So there's a lot of different use cases for it. And there's also a lot of potential uses for it in the mental health arena. And so that's what we want to talk about further today. But I think that it would also help people if we can talk a little bit about the capabilities, you know, what is it really capable of doing? So it can read emotions and it can do so faster than a human can. It can detect changes during a conversation to kind of figure out if someone is starting, you know, to try to mislead or, you know, whatever the situation may be. And it can provide information to a clinician real time during the conversation, a lot faster than the human can kind of figure out what's going on and then react to it. As I said before, it can detect when somebody is trying to lie or give any kind of false information, which enables it to kind of read hidden emotions. And, you know, if you think about it, when somebody says they're fine, they might not always be fine. And so in mental health, there's some help, you know, some different areas that this could help. And I think that the best way to use it in mental health is for clinical health, kind of as an assistive tool and for decision support to help in those areas. So I'll pass it on to others. I can see Barbara is ready to make a comment on that as well.
Yeah. And Michelle, thank you for setting that up so well about sort of where it's been used. And I want to talk a little bit about the sort of deeper dive in the mental health space. And so as Michelle said, and Rob knows far more about this, and maybe we'll look to him to chime in on the how, you know, it does these things that Michelle said. I'm not going to talk about how, but we know it requires models and learning. And that's also part of this really important process that we do need people to understand. It's not magic. You don't turn on the switch and it can tell how Barbara Van Dalen is feeling today based on just, you know, a vacuum. It has to have information that helps it understand me in the context of other cases like me. So we'll maybe talk a little bit about that. But this notion of that it's been used in these areas that Michelle mentioned, you know, customer service and fraud detection, because it's detecting changes in our voice, in the tone. It can identify levels of stress. And as Michelle said, you know, for fraud detection, there is the intentional effort to deceive, right? But the reason that lie detectors are only effective in certain cases is that sometimes people are not telling the truth, but they don't know they're not telling the truth. They're not intentionally lying. They may be denying. They may be emotionally blocking what's really going on. So if you have something like emotion AI, the person may not be intentionally trying to deceive the person maybe on the other end of a crisis line. But what clinicians and counselors are trained to do is to detect these nuances, to detect how someone is reacting and responding that may tell the clinician or the counselor, you know what, I think there's something going on here. The person, the way that their speech is pressured, or the level of stress or agitation, or the level of flatness in their tone when someone is depressed. All of these things we humans are trained. And as my daughters used to say, Mom, you can detect one part per billion. Get away, go away, because I knew, because that's, I've been trained in a way like that to detect. So AI does that. So imagine people calling a hotline and being able to get information, as Michelle said, real time, that helps that clinician perhaps with further inquiry, that helps them ask in a way based on the feedback from the AI that allows them to make a quicker assessment, a more effective, more accurate. So that's really the power that we're talking about here, the potential power.
Yeah, let me add on to that. AI is just a very, very powerful assistive sort of technology that we can apply. And you heard Barbara and Michelle talk about both the challenge set and then how we can apply AI. And for the listeners, one of the questions is, so how does the AI do that? How does it learn? Well, first of all, data, lots of data. And this is the difference between what human beings can process and what AI agents, and let's call them an AI agent, some say AI platform, AI application. But overall, let's call this thing an AI agent that is trained on mounds and mounds and mounds of data. Think in terms of petabytes worth of data and more, interestingly. And
how much once is that, Rob? How much is that?
A lot. We talk about parameters now, billions of parameters. It's just, and this is a capability that we humans just don't have in terms of our brains processing that much information. So there are different sort of modalities. One would be text, and another would be voice. Another would be images. Another would be video. And you can imagine a human being that calls in distressed and having a capability to classify the kind of stress that you're hearing, happy, sad, distressed, mad, angry. And this is something that the AI, once it's trained, can do. Now, we believe, and in the article we talked about, AI not being a black box, that you need human beings in the loop to assess also the AI and make it better. But you want to be transparent in this new technology as it's processing this information and providing feedback, a classification of emotion. The other thing AI does very well is predict. So think about classification of an emotion and then predictive analytics in terms of how to respond as well. You know, the three of us learned a lot, and Michelle will talk about Mission Daybreak, and we had an opportunity to talk to veteran crisis line operators and administrators and leadership within the Department of Veterans Affairs. And it's amazing what these VCL operators are doing. They're called VCL responders. They've got a workload. They spend minutes to hours on a crisis line with someone, a veteran who is calling that's in distress. So you can imagine both the degree of stress, and over time, human beings get tired at the end of the day. So having this tool that is assistive and can augment the human being, in this case, the Veterans Crisis Line responder, in being able to both understand better the emotions of someone in stress and then dealing with that stress accordingly.
And just before we move on from this question, again, I think it's interesting because people may not think about this, but the AI can also help me, the responder, me, the clinician, by listening in to my own. Rob just mentioned clinicians are human. Counselors, responders, they get tired. They get overwhelmed by what they're hearing sometimes. They even feel angry or irritable if the person on the other line is lashing out because they're in pain or they're in distress. So having that feedback about me, about how I'm responding, can help me tune into, track my own emotional reaction and be more helpful to the person on the line.
That's excellent. And this is all a perfect segue into my next question, which is, tell us about how DSS is supporting the development of emotion AI solutions. Why is DSS choosing to get into this space? And I know there are some Mission Daybreak efforts there as well. And we'll go with Michelle on this one.
Sure. DSS is always looking to the future of healthcare. I mean, we're always looking at new technologies, new innovative ideas. We're looking for things that will help to project, you know, toward a future of wellness and well-being. And we're always looking at solutions that will resolve challenges that are currently in the healthcare industry. Things that can assist in earlier detection or prevention of disease and improve patient outcomes and patient satisfaction. And so we're always supporting the development of this technology, continually working to improve the technology, looking at new use cases that could potentially benefit additional populations that are in need. You know, we've been working with the VA in the mental health sector for many years, and suicide prevention is a very high priority for the VA, and it is for us as well. Our goal is really to provide the VA with the tools necessary to give the veterans the best healthcare possible, whether it be physical or mental. And really, the two go together. You know, they go together very closely. So they affect each other. And so both are very important. And, you know, their overall health is, you know, the ultimate outcome based on receiving good care in both areas. Preventing suicide is also a very important part of our goals. When we learned about what the VA was doing with Mission Daybreak, we were really, you know, immediately pulled in because of the work that we've done so far in mental health. And we were very interested in helping in this area. We've got several products, as I mentioned, already in that area. And so, of course, you know, we wanted to continue to work toward advancing technologies in this area. So our submission for Mission Daybreak was really focused on the veterans that are calling the Veteran Crisis Line. And the veterans calling are a population that's already in crisis, potentially in crisis. Not every veteran that calls is already in crisis, but that's the main purpose of the line. So many are. And the responders have a very difficult job, as Rob mentioned earlier. They have to gain information on various different applications on the background of the veteran. And they also have to document what's going on during the call, you know, what's happening. But at the same time, they're wanting to engage with the veteran, which is really the most important thing that they need to do during the call, is to engage. And so having an assistive tool available to them that can tell them about the veteran's emotional state, their level of stress, and also to give them some background information without having to go to other applications, really helps them to do the triage that they need to do and do all the decision-making that they need to do as far as what the next steps for this veteran are. And so really, we're just looking to reduce the stress on the responder, take away the complexity of their job, and just enable them to focus more on their interaction with the veteran. And that we would expect to produce a better outcome. So ultimately, our goal is to reduce and prevent suicide and to ensure that each veteran gets the care and support that they need. You know, that potentially these responders are saving lives every day, helping these veterans, and our veterans deserve that after having served our country.
Let me also put in a plug for DSS. DSS has been in this business for 30 years to care for and empower our veterans and our military community. And that kind of experience in terms of now being able to bring in a very exciting and new technology that is AI means you've got a company that understands the needs and challenges of the veterans community. And because of the products that DSS has developed in the past, being able to understand capabilities and limitations of products that have artificial intelligence as a part of their solution set. So it's experience, it's a performance, but it's also, you know, understanding innovation and taking the risks to improve processes and solutions for the department and for our veterans and military community.
I'll just chime in and say that, you know, to Rob's point, Michelle's point about the investment here, the history, I think it's why the DSS invited me to get involved, not for a specific thing that they wanted me to help with, but more because they recognize the expertise and the experience, and they want to be moving more and more in this space. To me, that's very significant. You asked the why. It's because it's at the core of their mission, clearly. And so making investments in people, bringing in the right experts in the technology, exploring the opportunities, it's very exciting. It's a very exciting time to be working with a company that is really on the cutting edge of developing these kinds of tools and technologies and processes to save lives.
That's awesome. Love everybody's feedback on that one. And actually, when Michelle was speaking earlier, it was a great segue into my next question, because really Michelle touched upon about how emotion AI can really help with suicide prevention efforts at the VA. And let's dive in a little bit deeper on that one. And we'll start with Barbara on that.
Well, I think we've touched on a lot of it. It really is identifying people who are at high risk as quickly as possible. We talked a lot about the emotion AI detecting the change in voice and the level of distress and agitation to help guide the counselor, to help guide the responder. The other thing that Rob mentioned is the massive amount of data so that AI can churn and pull out of, again, these risk factors, because this is what we know about suicide prevention. It is not one thing. I mentioned at the beginning when we were talking about that this is an international challenge right now in our world. It has been for a very long time. The numbers are going in the wrong direction. Good news is that at the VA, the numbers are going in the right direction, that we have seen, because of all the efforts of the VA, those numbers are going down. People may recall there was a time when you would hear the statement of, you know, 22 veterans a day die by suicide. And now that number is actually, and some of it is a better way of looking at data, back to data, but also all the efforts of the VA and others in the community have lowered that number. It's still higher than the national average. It's still way too high. One is too high, but we have moved the needle on that to what now is commonly talked about as 17. Again, way too many, period. But back to, you know, the suicide prevention specifically, there is no one cause, there is no one factor, there's no one solution. But AI being able to detect veterans who are at high risk based on how they sound, how they're presenting, the other data from their records, quickly, efficiently, effectively, is key to helping us reach out and connect with those veterans and get them directed to the proper services as quickly as possible.
Yeah, let me add too that there was a major change over the last year or so, and that was a mandate on the part of the federal government to move mental health and potential suicide calls to a new number. You know, everyone was calling, of course, the 911 number, but now there's 988. So now we've got data, you know, through those calls flowing in that can be used with respect to artificial intelligence to better improve the precision in terms of emotion AI as well. Having that data available is absolutely key to being able to build an AI agent that is precise. There's a score, precision scores, precision and recall called the F1 score. It's a bit technical, but just think in terms of the degree to which the artificial intelligence can be precise in recognizing and then classifying an emotion to help with predictions on how to deal with the caller as well. So we've got this new 988 number, and AI continues to get better in terms of its classification and precision. It used to be in the old world of AI that you had a set of rules And the AI was fed those set of rules and then was able to perform its task. Now we use neural networks. We treat the AI as a 5-year-old to an 8-year-old. We don't have those sets of rules, and it learns on its own over time, interestingly enough. And we have found that the AI can be much more precise and powerful as long as you have the data available to train it. That's important. So this new 988 number is instrumental in being able to accrue the data that you need to be able to also train the AI and attend more precisely and personally to the caller. Because, of course, with 911, the caller could be calling in with respect to crises along a spectrum of problems and activities.
And just to, now I'm going to step into my advocate role for a second, because Rob brought up 988. Really important in our country. Yes. A lot of advocates and huge effort from the number of mental health suicide prevention organizations for many years to get 988. So just for people who don't know, because a lot of people still don't know what 988 is or when you use it. 988 rolled out in July of 2022. So it's just about a year that we've had it. The intention was to create a crisis line like 911, but that 988 is to be used if it's a mental health crisis. So that includes suicide. It's not only for suicide. So people who are in emotional distress or have someone that they care about and don't know what to do or how to get them help, that's what 988 is for. There is a vast network. It is not perfect. We need to actually work on the infrastructure around the country to support 988 so that people in crisis, like if you call because your house is on fire, well, a fire truck comes to put out the fire. We are not there yet with 988, but we're making progress. So people should, if they're interested, learn more about that. The Veterans Crisis Line is part of this massive system. And veterans, when they call 988, they will hear that reference to connecting them if they are a veteran. So call the Veterans Crisis Line, but if you call 988, you will be directed to the VCL. It is part of the system.
All right, that's great. Awesome stuff there to share with our listeners. And, you know, in terms of AI, there's definitely a flip side to the coin, and we've all seen the press coverage of it too, which are really the unintended consequences of generative AI, which also really includes emotion AI. So we'd love to hear more about the, I guess, unintended consequences / potential outcomes. And we'll start with Rob on this.
Yeah, generative AI to the public is new, even though it's been around for a little while. What occurred back in November of 2022 is OpenAI, an artificial intelligence company, made accessible their large language model. It's called an LLM. And this is a generative artificial intelligence model. Now, what does that mean? It uses a process where that model is trained on, again, mounds and mounds and mounds of information and data, a corpus of data. And as a result of a process, and people hear the words GPT, GPT 3.5, GPT 4, generative pre-trained transformer. That's what GPT means. And for the audience, you know, what they should know is these large language models are trained on public data on the internet, private data sources as well. And they can, as a result, generate new content, create a picture, come up with a resume based on information that you put into it, devise a plan of action. Interestingly enough, it's amazing what can be created with generative AI, but there are some dangers. First of all, no one on the planet knows exactly how it works. Nobody. And we are trying to get to the bottom of how generative AI actually works. Now, why is that a problem? Because you want to make sure that the AI is aligned with humans and our good intentions, of course, and reason for being on this planet. And if you don't know how the AI does what it does, generative AI does what it does, you cannot for certain say that its actions are aligned basically with human progress. That's first. Second, generative AI can hallucinate. It makes things up with confidence, Matt. And so it sounds like it knows what it's talking about, but sometimes it doesn't. Not at all. Now that's getting better. These large language models are being what we call fine-tuned by their developers. But hallucination is an issue. Now think of dealing with someone in stress and using generative AI as a part of an emotion AI system to be able to personalize programs as a follow-up in activities. But it hallucinates. Basically, that the kinds of facts that it produces are indeed facts without validation and research at the end of the day. So those are two major flaws of generative AI. And at the same time, what a powerful technology to be able to harness to improve emotion AI solutions at the end of the day. So we have to go into this with eyes open. And the way we do that is we establish principles of ethics at the end of the day in terms of being able to use this type of technology to make sure it and we as human beings are accountable, it and we are transparent in what we're doing, and it, the AI, and we are responsible, especially in attending to the population of veterans in stress and in crisis.
So a couple of things to add on, and Rob and I have talked about this. When he first told me and used the term hallucination, I went, what? And my reaction was because as a mental health professional, I do not like to hear terms that are specific to the mental health suffering that we experience, that people struggle with, thrown around or become now part of the cultural sort of pop language use. And I'll talk about why, but I'll give you some examples. People say things still that make me cringe on a regular basis, like, oh, she's so schizophrenic. No, she's not schizophrenic. Schizophrenia is a very serious condition. My mom suffered from schizophrenia. I know what that looks like. It is not what people, and to people who are either family members or who are dealing with that condition, that's very painful. Same with OCD. There's been a movement because people online have used OCD like, look at, here's my OCD, and they'll show how well organized their cupboards are as if that's a something positive. So when Rob told me that now hallucination is a thing, I'm concerned about the use of this. Now that is not specific. That's why I gave these other examples. That's not something that AI is creating. It's just something we need to be mindful of to how that we refer to these things and what people come to understand hallucination means. Because I can guarantee that someone who is experiencing an actual hallucination, it is terrifying, it is disorienting, it is disturbing. So there's that piece. Rob mentioned the potential unintended consequences. One of the things that we know is that AI isn't always great because of what we put into it with different populations, cultural differences. And so meaning that a culture that maybe communicates their emotions, their expressions, their feelings to each other may have different inflection, tone, tendencies, patterns. I can give you, I won't, but there's lots of examples that we could all think about, like some that are funny, about different cultures that we actually, you know very well about how they express or don't express. And so if we don't train the model properly, it makes mistakes about a group, a segment of the veteran population. So that's another unintended potential negative consequence, but that's on us to train it properly. And then the last thing I will say is more about this general whole space. Rob mentioned, you know, ethics, how we approach this, being responsible, being transparent, transparency. We need to make sure that we educate our veterans, their larger community that supports them, so they understand and that they know that it is a tool that's being used, how it's being used, how it can be helpful, allow them to understand, ask questions. These are ways that we can mitigate these unintended consequences.
Yeah, and this goes back to the importance of DSS having the 30 years of experience and being an organization of trust for the Department of Veterans Affairs and for our veterans community, because this is a new technology in terms of some of its application. And you've got to have that trust with organizations up front when you're devising applications like this, emotion AI, or the use of generative AI, to apply to a challenge such as mental health and suicide prevention. Very key in terms of the organizations that can lead on establishing new ways and innovative methods for being able to improve delivery of services and especially attending to the care of our veterans.
That's great, Rob. And that actually plays in well. And I know we discussed this briefly, but let's talk about how we can educate the military and veteran community about AI, because my goodness, I think when we were talking earlier this year and planning this article for Federal News Network, we talked again a month later and the world had changed within a month. So things are moving really quickly out there. So really, what's the best strategy to educate the military community and veterans?
Yeah, you know, you need to have a very effective and thoughtful engagement plan beforehand. You know, you don't come into this sort of thing using these kinds of technologies without having been very judicious in engaging the broader military community, engaging the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, thinking about American federalism. Remember, we are very unique as a country in our structure of government. So this is not only engagement at the federal level and our veterans population, but the state and local levels as well. Remember, we do have veterans organizations at different levels across the country too. So a comprehensive communication and engagement plan to build transparency and trust is instrumental. You know, artificial intelligence is getting a lot of attention, as we know, through the media, and people are already drawing conclusions, both for good and for ill. So bringing this sort of new technology does beg an effective communications and engagement plan that is thoughtful and that's comprehensive.
And that's really, I mean, I think DSS, you know, what we're doing here today is a great example of DSS taking a leading role and the importance of having these conversations, of offering ethical training for organizations that might want that, for really pushing on the care side of this, to care for those that we serve by making sure that they're well-informed and at a level that people can easily understand, because obviously there's a lot in the deep dive on the technology side that isn't for everybody. Valuable, important, a lot of those conversations are out there happening, articles written. We need to talk to people with plain language so that they understand what it is, what it isn't, and allow them to be part of, see behind the scenes, if you will, be part of the process.
All right, great. Well, we're at the end of this discussion. This has been just incredible. I think we've covered off on so many things, but we always like to wrap these up with a future-focused perspective. And who knows what the future holds with AI, but I'm going to put it on your hand to answer this question. So what does the future hold when it comes to AI? And we'll start with Rob.
Very promising applications and solutions, given that we are very judicious as a species, really, about its progress, application, and use. And especially with respect to healthcare and education, I might add, we're going to see very new innovations. And I'm just delighted to be a part of a group that cares for our military community, but is also willing to innovate, to take new technologies like AI in a thoughtful way, in an ethical way, and improve how we can care for and empower our veterans and our military families as well. So it's a very exciting time, there's no doubt. But you have to have the right organizations leading and establishing a framework of engagement and using these new technologies.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob. Michelle, any future-focused thoughts around AI?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of excitement. There's so much that can be done. I really feel like in the near future, as AI becomes more mature, that we're going to be able to use it more in our everyday lives. It's going to enable us to accomplish more in less time, kind of increase our productivity by kind of automating some of the tasks that we're currently doing and, you know, just enabling us to take on the more higher level creative or strategic thinking type of tasks and let it do the monotonous tasks, you know, that take so much of our time up. And we use it already. You know, we've all heard of data-driven decisions. And we use data now to make business decisions. But we have more and more information available. And, you know, as the AI, the large models are able to analyze so much more data that it will bring more information to us to help us to make decisions. And all of that data will also be able to be used to resolve problems or issues or solve puzzles, so to speak. You know, if you think about science and technology, healthcare, it can help to solve some of the problems we have in those areas. It can, in healthcare, it will help us to come up with more cures. It will help us more with preventative measures. This is the area that we're most interested in. So, you know, I hope you don't mind if I kind of, instead of talking about science and engineering, I'm more into the healthcare here. But, you know, there's so many problems that it can help us with. We're already working with precision medicine to a certain degree. It's not available to the everyday person. But again, that's something that will be improved upon as this technology advances and matures. And it's going to be able to look at each individual patient as an individual, look at genetics, environment, you know, different lifestyle, and it's going to be able to tailor treatment specifically for that individual and also be able to tell that individual about risk. What are they at risk of having? What problems might they have in the future that we can take some measures right now to prevent? So, you know, there's a lot that can be done with this AI. I mean, in education, it can be used to have more engaging educational materials using virtual reality and augmented reality to have immersive learning experiences. And of course, the more engaged you are, the more you're going to learn from that particular experience. And I said I wasn't going to go into engineering, but we all know about the automated vehicles that are being studied right now. And there are some being tested on the road, but we aren't using them in our everyday life right now. We're not just, you know, calling an Uber and it shows up with an autonomous vehicle with no driver. So going forward, as this technology improves, things like that are going to be more a part of our everyday life than they currently are. And there's so many potential uses for it. There really are. There's so many things that it can help solve. You know, come up with new, cleaner energy technologies. And I could go on forever, I think. So I think I should stop there. But I just feel like even though there's a lot of risks that we need to manage, which we can manage by, you know, the way that we work with these different AI technologies, I feel like there's so much potential there for helping, particularly in healthcare, that I feel like there's a very promising future out there for us.
I just wanted to say that in the mental health space in particular, we've talked about a lot of what it can do. I want to talk about what it can't do for a minute, because people have concerns, you know, is it going to be that my therapist is going to be AI? Not anytime soon. AI can do a lot in the space. AI can give prompts to remind people about things that they have found to be helpful to them. There are all kinds of AI programs right now out there in the mental health space that do that, that, you know, check in with people. All that is very, very positive, very, very helpful. But I think Rob would agree, we're not there yet. And frankly, I hope we never, ever imagine AI taking the place of that human connection when it's about what's so healing about a good client therapist relationship is the humanness. That human that we cannot identify, and because it's human to human. So we don't have to worry about that on the flip side. That's not going to take the place of our mental health professionals. It just will be a tremendous help to us and to our clients between conversations. So I just want to put that out there as a note as well.
I want to echo that as well, because the human interaction is so important. This is definitely supportive. We would use it, you know, definitely as a supportive tool, not as a replacement for human.
Perfect. Well, this concludes this very special and very comprehensive DSS Fed Health Forward podcast interview, where Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, who's the former executive director of the Prevents Presidential Executive Order Task Force and strategic advisor to DSS, as well as Michelle Burst, who is the Director of Strategic Innovations and Analytics at DSS, and Rob Gordon, the Chief Growth Officer at SBG Technologies, all came together for a very lively discussion and a deep dive perspective on the impact of emotion AI on veteran healthcare and much, much more. And Barbara, Michelle, and Rob, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.